Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Third Canto, Chapter 21, Text 9. Satam virajamarkabham sita padmodbalasrajam snigdha nilalaka vrata vaktrabjam virajombaram. It's 21:9. Satam virajam arkabhyam
vam.
Sita padmod palasrajam.
Snigdha nilalaka vrata.
Snigdha nilalaka vrata. Vaktrabjam virajombaram.
Giritam kandidam.
Nine.
Satam virajam arhab.
Satam virajam arkabham.
Sita padma palasrajam.
Sita padma palasrajam.
Snigdha nilalaka vrata.
Snigdha nilalaka vrata. Vaktrabjam virajombaram. Satam virajam arkabham. Sita padmod palasrajam. Snigdha nilalaka vrata. Vaktrabjam virajombaram. Saha. That part of Muni. Tam. Him. Virajam.
Without contamination.
Arkabjam. Arkabjam, arkabham, effulgent like the sun. Sita, white. Padma, lotuses. Utpala, water lilies. Srajam, garland. Snigdha, slick. Nila, blackish blue. Alaka, of locks of hair. Vrata, an abundance. Vaktra, face. Abjam, lotus-like. Virajaha, spotless. Ambaram, clothing. Karta Muni saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is free from material contamination, in his eternal form, effulgent like the sun, wearing a garland of white lotuses and water lilies. The Lord was clad in spotless yellow silk, and his lotus face was fringed with slick, dark locks of curly hair. Kiditinam kundalinam shankha chakra gadadharam svetotpala kridanakam manasparsha smite kshanam. Adorned with a crown and earrings, he held his characteristic conch, disc, and mace in three of his hands, and a white lily in the fourth. He glanced about in a happy, smiling mood whose sight captivates the hearts of all devotees. Vinyasta chalanam bhojam angsha deshe gurutmataha drishtva ke vastitam vaksha shriyam kaushtu pakandharam. A golden streak on his chest, the famous Kaustubha gem suspended from his neck, he stood in the air with his lotus feet placed on the shoulders of Garuda. Purport. The descriptions in verses 9 through 11 of the Lord in his transcendental eternal form are understood to be descriptions from the authoritative Vedic version. These descriptions are certainly not the imagination of Kardam Muni. The decorations of the Lord are beyond material conception, as admitted even by the impersonalists like Shankaracharya. Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has nothing to do with material creation. The varieties of the transcendental Lord, his body, his form, his dress, his instruction, his words, are not manufactured by the material energy, but are all confirmed in the Vedic literature. By performance of yoga, Kardam Muni actually saw the Supreme Lord as he is. There is no point in seeing an imagined form of God after practicing yoga for 10,000 years. The perfection of yoga, therefore, does not terminate in voidness or impersonalism. On the contrary, the perfection of yoga is attained when one actually sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his eternal form. The process of Krishna consciousness is to deliver the form of Krishna directly. The form of Krishna is described in the authoritative Vedic literature from the Sangita. His abode is made of Chintamani stone, and the Lord plays there as a cowherd boy and is served by many thousands of gopis. These descriptions are authoritative, and a Krishna conscious person takes them directly, acts on them, preaches them, and practices devotional service as enjoined in the authoritative scriptures. Om Akyama Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurnyaditam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Padamayam Tathati Shapadantitam Mandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Shagrajatam Shaharana Raghunatam Vitam Stam Sajivam Shadvaitam Shavadrutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Shaharana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Shah Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhau Dina Bandha Jagat Pate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchako Pitarubhyascha Kripa Sindhavya Eva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadhi Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Hare. Well, here's a detailed description of the appearance of the Lord. The Lord is seen by Bhagavan Muni face to face. It's not allegorical or theoretical or imaginary. Prabhupada said, as I'm a person, you're a person, Krishna's a person, and you can see Krishna face to face. So that was possible, like Bhagavan Muni, Prabhupada pointed out. Why meditate for 10,000 years just to see an imaginary form? What's the point? It doesn't take 10,000 years for that. But by his meditation, pashyanti panti kalyanti chudakyanti dhyana vastatutadyutena manasa pashyanti amyoriya. By meditation, the perfected devotee is able to see personality of Godhead. And what he was able to see is described here, just the opposite of the great white light that people want, which you can't see anyway because you're supposed to merge with it, so then you don't see it. The distinction between seer and seen, between subject and object, is obliterated. So there's no seeing, there's just being. Which, of course, is what they want. They want to be, but not. But even then, do they really? One suspects that they would like to be it and see themselves being it at the same time. Because experience is natural to us. Obliteration of experience is unnatural. So, losing individuality entirely, although it's the professed aim of the impersonalists, you wonder whether it's what they really want to achieve, or if they couldn't see themselves achieving it. The pleasure is to see yourself merging with Big One or whatever, but actually merging and losing everything. Says that it's hellish. Prakashananda? No. I don't think so. Prabodhananda Saraswati. Yeah, he says it's hellish. So, here just the opposite in detail. What he saw. Satam virajamarka hum. Virajam, no contamination. The Mayavadis imagine if there's a form, it must be contaminated by the material nature. Subtly, it's a product of material nature. No, virajam, no contamination. Pure. Arkab hum, like arka, the sun, effulgent. Sittapadma utpala. Srajam, and a wearing a garland of lotuses and water lilies. Snigta nila alaka vrata vaktrabjam. His lotus-like face was surrounded, topped, you could say, but anyway, above his lotus fringed, fringed with dark hair, nila, blackish blue color, and snigdha. Snigdha is a slick here, but slick has a rather unpleasant connotation in at least American usage. You know, slick hair is like greasy kid stuff hair. Snigdha. Snigdha. No, snigdha means like slick or oily, but then it comes to mean, by extension, very nice, like affectionate. Ruyu snigdhasya shishasya. A very obedient, nice disciple, snigdha, ruyu snigdhasya shishasya. To a very slick disciple, the spiritual master gives all blessings. It doesn't mean slick or oily or unctuous or any of that. It means very nice. Very, very nice. That's how it's used by extension. So here his hair was smooth. You know, not brittle, but very smooth hair. And of a dark bluish black color. You see that sometimes in India, that people's hair is black and to the point of bluish, even. Not bright blue, but a little blue. Kiritinam kundalinam shankachakra gadadharam svetorpala kridanatam. He had kiritinam, helmet, and kundalinam, earrings, and shankachakra gada, but not padma. Instead of the padma, he had svetopala, a white lily. So the Lord can bury things if he likes. Whatever he wants, he can pick up. And manas sparsha smitekshanam. And he was glancing with a smile, which was manas sparsha, heart touching, or mind touching, heart touching. Such a smile that the heart would be enchanted. Vinyasta charanam bhojam. Angsha deshe gurutam, gurutmata. And the Lord was riding on Garuda. His lotus feet were placed on the shoulders of Garuda. Drishtva ke avastitam vaksha shriyam kaustubha kantaram. And he stood in the air. I don't know whether that means that he was like directly in the air or whether, well, Garuda's in the air, so the Lord is in the air. Either one is possible. The Lord, sometimes it's described that he can be floating like that, not bound by the laws of gravity. But otherwise, one would expect that he's standing on Garuda, and Garuda's in the sky. Drishtva ke vastitam vaksha vakshashriyam. Vakshashriyam, and on his chest is the golden line representing Vakshmi. Srila Prabhupada mentions that in Vaikuntha, everyone looks the same. They're all forearmed, they're all that. Therefore, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Gop Kumar goes to Vaikuntha, he's standing at the gate waiting for the guard to give permission for him to enter. And while he's standing at the gate, he sees this big swan airplane moving in, and he sees beautiful four-armed figure with Shankar Chakra, Gada Padman, crown and garlands, and people singing his praises, and Gop Kumar immediately offers obeisances and starts glorifying, "Oh Lord Narayan, oh Lord Narayan." And the devotee who's riding on that plane says, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm not Narayana. You got the wrong person. I'm not Narayana. I'm just a servant of Narayana. Hold on." So Gop Kumar, so then he flies into the city, and Gop Kumar keeps waiting, because Lord Narayana has gone out for some work, it seems. And another swan comes in again. "Oh, Lord Narayana, oh Lord, no. I'm also not Narayana." Because everyone looks like Narayana. The Lord's commanders and his agents, they all look like him. But these two signs distinguish the Lord. This Kaustubha Mani, the Kaustubha jewel, and the Srivaks, the mark of Lakshmi Ji. These are the special distinguishing features of the Lord. Apart from that, everyone knows who's who anyway, because they're just like twins. The mother can tell them apart, no problem. Everybody else, "Are you this one or are you that?" But the mother always knows. So the devotees all know who Lord Narayan is, and he's especially distinguished by these two marks. The Prabhupada remarks that all of these descriptions are coming from authoritative Shastra. So there's no room for mental speculation. That won't help us. The Prabhupada says the Krishna conscious person takes these descriptions directly, acts on them, preaches them, practices devotional service. So this is Prabhupada's presentation. You can imagine the academic scholar commenting on such a verse and sort of, you know, giving some grammatical, analytical points, or perhaps saying a similar term is used in such and such place. It appears from a manuscript that this may be something, you know, going on and on. But never would he say, "So you have to accept this, you have to act on this." That would be beyond their... For them, it's just another topic for theoretical discussion. One of our scholarly friends, Hindu scholar, no longer in this world, but he wrote a great commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita after Prabhupada did. And he actually didn't finish it in his lifetime. It was finished by one of his students. Great work, published by Harvard University. But one time he was approached by one of our devotees for writing something. And as described by our devotee, the man was in his cups. Typical. That they're scholars, but scholar doesn't mean that you follow any sort of regular principles. No gambling, no intoxication, no meat eating, no this and that. That's beside the point. Main thing is your scholarship. But for Srila Prabhupada, that's not the main thing. And for Krishna, that's not the main thing. What a great scholar you are. Fantastico, disantabhatsarasantabha. You travel for millions of years of scholar top speed. You'll never reach the bodhi speed of Krishna. But atma-bhakti, if one has pure devotional service, then one can very easily get Krishna's mercy. So this is the distinction of Srila Prabhupada's books, that they're practical. It's not just some theoretical discussion, or some imaginary interpretation. But Prabhupada's presenting the books as factual directions from the personality of Godhead about what is what and what we should do. Who is God? What is our relationship with Him? What are His energies? how we should act in relation to him. Everything is described in practical terms. And therefore, the book has value. Otherwise, what is the value of the book, apart from making a career? What do you get? This guy is, oh, very interesting. And there, of course, in the Pune, no point. Ultimately, it's of no ultimate consequence. It's just of relative interest. But Srila Prabhupada is presenting Srimad Bhagavatam as it was meant to be understood, as the science of the absolute truth. Yes. What is that? Vedyam vastavam atra vastu shividam. Tapatra, it's meant for uprooting the threefold miseries. It's meant for distinguishing between the truth and illusion. It's meant, yes, vedyam vastavam atra vastu shividam. It's meant for the welfare of everyone. Therefore, Vyasadeva wrote this book. Srimad Bhagavate Mahamudrita. Kim Ba Parayi Shri. Yes? Sadhya Sushruti Di, Shri 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 Di Dakshina. What is that? That when one faithfully hears Srimad Bhagavatam, Shru Shru Shruti, then quickly, within an instant, Krishna can reveal himself within the heart. If we hear Srimad Bhagavatam with full attention and full faith, then sadhya, immediately, quickly, Krishna will be manifest. So this is the real benefit that we're meant to have. Kardamuni wasn't just trying to experiment, do some meditation and get some mystic powers or something. His goal was to see the personality of God. And he was able to do so. Any questions? Comments? Yes?
We were speaking about Krishna's hair. I was remembering Himavati once told me that Prabhupada said to her, Krishna's hair is greasy. Well, she said, greasy, Prabhupada? And he said, yeah, greasy.
Yeah. And greasy doesn't have the same connotation.
Right.
Yeah. Greasy kid stuff.
Yeah. Grill cream.
Yeah, grill cream, greasy kid stuff. The alternative to the greasy kid stuff. Yeah.
I just had a question of people who are speaking about the mind. The mind and the heart. The way you say the mind is situated is in the heart. But if that's true, then how do we experience in the head? Experience, you know.
The mind, the head, the heart. The different Sanskrit terms are used. Chitta is maybe a kind of clinical term. Consciousness. Chitta. Then sometimes it's rendered grit, the heart. Sometimes mana, the mind. I think in biblical literature the same thing happens, that heart, mind, they sort of get interchangeable. In our English, normal English, we say that, you know, my mind was disturbed or my heart was disturbed. It means the same thing, practically. I couldn't get him out of my mind. I couldn't get him out of my heart. It means just about the same thing. Sometimes mind is thought of as being more mechanical or more clinical or more intellectual, and heart is more emotional. In our English connotations of the word, but they're, for a lot of purposes, they're freely interchanged. And certainly for consciousness, we can go either way, right? If it's in your heart, it's in your consciousness. If it's in your mind, it's in your consciousness. But mind is subtle. The heart, ultimately, from one point of view, is this muscle, not very big muscle, actually, sitting in the chest and going, and it said that the soul is there. But the soul is subtle. So even though Riddhesha Jivatishti, even though the Lord and the living entity are situated in the region of the heart, at the same time, the living entity is spread throughout the body. Yen Yatsavinidam Tatam, by consciousness, is everywhere in the whole body. So he's not just a physical thing. And mind is physical, but it's subtle matter. It's subtle matter. So probably your mind can be in Chicago in a moment. Or your mind can be in Goloka Vrindavan. Mind can go anywhere. Therefore, pantas vikoti satyavat, so the mental speed is so quick. So it's referred to both ways. The living entity, we understand, is in the heart, not in the head. But the consciousness is everywhere, and the organism is put together in such a way the heart does something, the head does something. But we saw that Daksha lost his head but kept his consciousness. But then again, people get heart transplants and they keep their consciousness also. Some other point? Appears like the gross body. Why does it appear that way? Why do you say that?
From
out of body experiences?
Yeah.
You mean what a person experiences and sees himself to be? How is it similar? You mean just because the illustration is similar? Yeah, because you have to indicate the idea that he's here but he's there. So then they make the illustration like a person floating up by the ceiling. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the mind has a form that appears like that of the ghost body.
What about the ghosts? I mean, there's people, and I have personally experienced it, that trying to get into me when I was under intoxication, and you have to fight it off. And there's definitely a living entity there.
There's definitely living beings.
And you can see what happens when some other person would actually get in, and Shilpavit said that's why you don't get so tired and get, because the drool is how that subtle body can get in there, and then all of a sudden there's a totally law-abiding person who's never done anything wrong in their life, and they become a mass murderer. There's numerous cases.
Ghostly haunted, the mind can take on the form of a person, especially if you identify with the person. You once say that Shokcham Chakshu Sparshanam Cha, Rasanam Pranamayati Chaya Adhishtaya Manas Chaya Vishayana Vasevate. And after the mind leaves the body at the time of death, one takes on a new body with senses clustered around the mind. You have a certain kind of mentality, and that mentality attracts, as it were, a particular set of senses. So he gets another eye, another ear, another set of senses according to the mind. So he had, you know, the mind, the sharp dresser and everything like that, and he becomes a zebra. Because that was in his mind. So if I'm identifying with this body, even my out-of-body experience, my subtle body may manifest itself, one might suppose, in that form, or it could be some other form. Even we hear, well, you hear about ghosts and they're dressed in a certain way, you know, a 19th century costume or something. But what is the dress made of? You know, satin or what? It's also subtle. So it appears to be, you know, the mind is manifest in the form of the person, the dress, the ornaments, the whole thing. It's all subtle energy projected in this way. So, get into the whole thing about ghosts and so on. Or out-of-body experiences. There are also, apart from out-of-body experiences, there are experiences of seeing a person who is physically not there. There's a book written in the past century, I guess, called Phantasms of the Living, in which a psychic researcher recorded histories of people who had seen apparitions, that's really the standard term, apparitions of someone. And typically the person is in trouble, and someone at a distance who's related to that person sees him. And sometimes the apparition appears after the time of the death of the person, or else sometimes before the death of the person, or else just in a time of emergency or some other significant emotional time. So an apparition appears, and sometimes, the person seeing me, you know, why am I seeing you? Essentially, you know, why am I seeing my brother? And then finds out later that just at that time, his brother was in such and such circumstances, or it was right before he died. There's some rather curious case in that collection where someone appeared before his employer and his face was spotted in some way, some marked in some way, and the employer had a conversation with him because he thought, you know, it's his employee, he's coming in, and talk to him, and you know, what's that? He said, you'll soon know. And then later, it turned out that employee had died of arsenic poisoning or something of the sort, for which that was a characteristic. And the employee had come and more or less told him, no, I don't remember the rest of it, more or less indicated that it hadn't intentionally committed suicide, or whatever it was, he wanted him to know something, that was the point. But, there's a big collection of such cases where the living being appears, you know, there's out-of-body cases where I feel myself to be out of my body, and then there's the opposite sort of thing, or a related sort of thing, where someone else sees you to be outside of your body. So both classes of, you can say, evidence for a non-mechanistic self are found in the literature.
Off the topic of out-of-body experiences, I was thinking, why does the impersonals tend to see exist in us? Because everything...
Why does the impersonals tend to see...
exist?
Tend to see what?
Impersonals tendency
yeah.
exists, because everything that's in the spiritual world. I mean, everything that Krishna has, we have here. So what is it? Why does it exist in human beings, this tendency to merge?
Why do they want to merge? Why this tendency? Prabhupada gives, of course, sometimes they don't want to merge. They just, well, there's two reasons, or several reasons. One is, life here is so miserable that they just think, let me end it all. How do I end it all? I become nothing, or I merge with the one. Well, that's nice. And then I end it. They don't have any positive knowledge of the Supreme, but they have the sense that the Supreme is some all-pervading, and you can't, in their conception, they don't know anything about personal exchanges. They just know there's the one, and all they can figure out, since the one is one, the only way you can have a connection is to merge with the one. You merge with the one. You can't enter the one in your individuality because the one is one. If you were there, it would be two. So the problem, again, is this subject-object distinction. When the objects are horrible, then the subject suffers. So the solution to that is to end the subject-object distinction, the difference between the experiencer and the experience. It all becomes one, and then there's no problem. So again, it's escaping. Prabhupada says it's fear of personal existence. My personal existence here is miserable, so I'm afraid of the personal existence. In transcendence, even, I think it must be something like this. There couldn't be, in other words, a blissful individual self. There could only be a blissful, homogenized self. In one sense, it's because of propaganda also. They're cheated by these guys who say, you know, just like homogenized milk, why are people taking it if it's not better? Propaganda, you know. If you don't take it homogenized, it won't be good for you. I mean, if you take it straight from the cow, who knows what might happen to you? You know, you have to have it pasteurized, homogenized, vitamin D added, maybe a couple of genes thrown in from a tomato or a crab to make it better. But not from the cow, my God, you know, you're not going to take that out of it. So it's propaganda, you know, that you don't want to serve, I mean, you don't want a God. You want the Buddha. Huh? So, mandasa mandamatiyo, they're misled, fearful, envious also. You know, okay, there's variety, it's all wonderful, and there's individuality, but it's not all about me, it's all about him. Go to hell with that. I'm not going to serve some god. That, who quoted the other day? Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. Such a good one. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. That's the mentality. So, okay, reigning in hell is not really going to work because there are too many competitors in hell. And besides, it's hellish. So, if I don't want to serve in heaven, and reigning in hell isn't going to work, so then let me merge with the one. Instead of serving Krishna, that comes. Diseased condition of the living.
You can see in the material world, people merge with the one by over intoxication and so on.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Drown your troubles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The sour grapes mentality.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't enjoy, so let me just, you know, I don't want to suffer, so I just sort of merge into tamaguna. People sleep all day.
Yeah,
sleep escapism. As long as I'm sleeping, I'm not suffering. As soon as I wake up, I have to face life again. So then they sleep, you know, to sleep. 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, 14 hours, 16 hours is a form of relief. Because the remaining hours are full of suffering. Yes, sleep is good, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Krishna's Leela, is also that in the Vaikuntha Planets, is Varnashram the backdrop for?
Do they have Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras in these Vaikunthas? Seems to be a largely Kshatriya scene. But what else might be there? Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras. It's mentioned by Sanatana Goswami in Srimad Bhagavatam that these, that for various pastimes of the Lord, the devotees take the roles of Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudras. They become sages, they become, some of them have three eyes and stuff. They do all, take all sorts of shapes and forms for the service of the Lord. Yeah, it's mentioned. I don't think that's the goal of the Vrindavan. That's my Vaikuntha description. They just do it. It's there.
It seems like they would need to be there in order to render the service to Lord Narayan. Somebody's got to grow the strawberries and somebody's got to milk the Vaikuntha cow if they want to make some offering for Lord Narayan. It's got to... Can't just pull it out of their hat, right?
Oh yeah, they can pull it out of their hat. The hats are all spiritual. You can pull it right out of your hat if you want. But it's mentioned that these things are there. Someone takes the role of the servant and as a sage, or someone takes the role of a this or that. There's no need in terms of the modes of nature because there aren't any. But for the pastimes of the Lord, the devotees assume these forms. Okay. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.